The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Will fragrant oils help control motion sickness? Question. My husband and I will be spending 2 weeks in Italy soon. Most of the driving in the area around Naples to Rome to Florence will be by tour bus. We'll take a high-speed train to Venice. I get motion sickness easily, especially in hilly mountainous areas. What can I take for this that won't make me drowsy? I've tried stretchy pressure point wristbands, but I didn't find them really effective. I read about a product called Quies Ease. I believe it is an aromatic inhaler. What can you tell me about it? Do you have other recommendations? Answer. Quies, which is spelled Q-U-E-A-S-E, Ease, E-A-S-E, contains four essential oils with distinctive fragrances, peppermint, ginger, spearmint, and lavender. A study published in the journal Anesthesia and Analgesia, September 2013, reported that aromatherapy, including spearmint, peppermint, ginger, and cardamom, was superior to placebo at relieving post-operative nausea. Other studies have shown that sniffing isopropyl alcohol from a gauze pad can alleviate nausea within 10 minutes, and that is cited in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, July 2016. Another option is taking ginger by mouth either as an extract in capsules or as crystallized ginger candy. Some research shows that this can have an anti-nausea effect, and that's cited in the European Review for Medical and Pharmacological Sciences, April 2015. Question. More than 20 years ago, I had chronic smelly feet. I soaked my offending extremities in an inch of common white vinegar. This took about 15 minutes and cost me a dime. The odor went away and has not returned. Do you have any idea what caused the odor and why the vinegar was so effective? The answer. Your results are better than average. Most people report that it takes several weeks of soaking for 15 to 30 minutes a day before foot odor goes away. Bacteria and fungi that can cause foot odor thrive in warm, dark, moist environments. Vinegar changes the pH of the skin and makes it less hospitable to these microbes. You can learn more about other approaches in our free Guide to Solutions for Smelly Feet. The PDF can be downloaded from the Health Guide section at peoplespharmacy.com. Will new opioid rules leave cancer patients in pain? Question. I am afraid the new restrictions on opioids may leave some people without good options. I don't have chronic pain myself, but when my mother was dying of lymphoma in the 1970s, she was getting good relief from opioid painkillers. Then her doctors took the drugs away because they thought she might become addicted. They deprived a terminally ill cancer patient the pain relief she needed. I remember her screams of pain to this day and still feel outraged. I wish I could go back in time and sue those doctors. I hope reason will prevail now and people with chronic pain will be able to get the pain relief they needed. The answer. Your story is heartbreaking. We hope today's cancer specialists and palliative care professionals are not withholding narcotics from terminal patients. The panic over the opioid epidemic has led many physicians to restrict such drugs for people in chronic pain. Until we have safer medicines, opioids will continue to be an important tool for those in severe pain. Question. I have been using Tecnu, T-E-C-N-U, for years to control poison ivy. It removes the poison ivy oil completely when it's used after contact with the plant. It also helps dry up the rash if I wasn't able to wash with it soon enough after contact. Some people use Zanfel, Z-A-N-F-E-L, for poison ivy rash, but I have found it's pricey, about 10 times more pronounced than Tecnu. Answer. Zanfel poison ivy wash and Tecnu outdoor skin cleanser help remove the urushiol oil from exposure to poison ivy, oak, or sumac. If used promptly after contact, these washes can prevent the rash that normally results. A barrier cream such as IVX, can be applied before going outside. It should help protect the skin from urushiol and make it easier to wash off. Question. My husband and I have been using Voltaren gel for years. This has enabled me to avoid knee replacements and my husband to avoid back surgery. When I first asked my orthopedic doctor about using the gel, he checked its effect on the kidneys and decided that it was okay to use. Answer. Topical nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as diclofenac, which is Voltaren gel, or Pennsaid, P-E-N-N-S-A-I-D, can provide helpful relief for sore joints. Often, topical medication does not trigger the same complications as oral NSAIDs. That said, some people are very sensitive to adverse effects, reporting heartburn and gastritis, as well as elevated blood pressure. From the New York Times by Jane Brody, Personal Health. Spotting signs of eating disorders in time to help. Eating disorders pose serious hazards to adolescents and young adults and are often hidden from family, friends, and even doctors, sometimes until the disorders cause lasting health damage and have become resistant to treatment. According to the Family Institute at Northwestern University, nearly 3% of teenagers between the ages of 13 and 18 have eating disorders. Boys as well as girls may be affected, even when the disorder does not reach the level of a clinical diagnosis. Some studies suggest that as many as half of teenage girls and 30% of boys have seriously distorted eating habits that can adversely affect them physically, academically, psychologically, and socially. Eating disorders can ultimately be fatal, said Dr. Laurie Hornberger, a specialist in adolescent medicine at Children's Mercy Kansas City. People with eating disorders can die of medical complications, but they may be even more likely to die of suicide. They become tired of having their lives controlled by eating and food issues. The problem is especially common among gymnasts, dancers, models, wrestlers, and other athletes who often struggle to maintain ultra-slim bodies or maintain restrictive weight limits. The transgender population is also at higher risk. It is not unusual for teenagers to adopt strange or extreme food-related behaviors, prompting many parents to think, this too shall pass. But experts say an eating disorder, anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating should not be considered, quote, normal, unquote, adolescent behavior. And they urge the adults in the youngsters' lives to be alert to telltale signs and take necessary action to stop the problem before it becomes entrenched. The importance of early diagnosis was underscored recently by an expert committee of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, whose members are often asked to explain menstrual irregularities and other consequences of abnormal food behaviors in girls and women. The college's Committee on Adolescent Health Care noted in a published opinion in June that adult and adolescent females with eating disorders may present with one or more gynecological concerns or symptoms. These can include a delay in puberty, irregular menses, stoppage of menstrual periods, pelvic pain, a thin, dry, inflamed vagina, and shrinkage of the breasts. While such gynecological symptoms usually self-correct when normal eating habits and body weight are restored, certain effects of eating disorders, especially when long-standing, can have serious and lasting health consequences. One is an insufficient development of bone density at a critical time of bone growth, resulting in a lifelong high risk of fractures. Another is cancer-inducing damage to the upper digestive tract and salivary glands from frequent self-induced vomiting, a practice common to bulimics. Dr. Anne Marie Ames Olschlager, a pediatric and adolescent gynecologist at Seattle Children's Hospital and a co-author of the new report, said many youngsters don't realize their eating disorder can have a long-term impact. During adolescence, you pile on bone density, establishing, in effect, a bone density piggy bank that is supposed to help sustain bone strength for life. Even though treatment of eating disorders is beyond the scope of gynecological practice, the committee urged the college's members to recognize and screen patients at risk for a food-related problem. A reversal of eating disorders frequently requires both physical and psychological treatment. Sometimes immediate hospitalization is needed to medically stabilize the patient before treatment can begin. The first step, though, is to recognize a disorder. The committee suggested that as a part of an examination, the doctor ask the patient how she feels about her weight, what she is eating, how much she is eating, and how much she is exercising, and follow up with an appropriate physical exam and lab test. When indicators are coupled with symptoms like reduced energy, isolation, irritability, and social withdrawal, professional help should be sought, the Institute said. Referral to an eating disorder center is ideal. An eating disorder is one of the hardest things to watch a child go through, said Dr. Nancy Sakori, co-author of the committee opinion, who specializes in pediatric and adolescent gynecology at Navicent Health Children's Hospital in Macon, Georgia. Parents should watch for extended trips to the bathroom, excessive exercise or extreme dieting, and avoid activities that involve food. The Associated Press, New York. Patients with infected kidneys cured of hepatitis C. Some patients in desperate need of a kidney transplant participated in a bold experiment where they received organs infected with hepatitis C. The gamble paid off. Their new organs are working fine thanks to medication that got rid of the virus, researchers reported recently. The study involved just 20 patients, but researchers say it suggests that organs currently going to waste just might help speed transplants. When there is such a bad organ shortage, we can't just do business as usual, said Dr. Peter Rees, a University of Pennsylvania kidney specialist who led the study. In the United States, almost 95,000 people are on the national kidney waiting list, but only 19,850 received a transplant in 2017, according to the United Network for Organ Sharing. Transplanting organs from patients with hepatitis C can infect the recipients, but with powerful new drugs now available that promise to cure them, Reese's team decided to test if it's safe to transplant infected kidneys to people who don't already have the virus, but who might not survive the wait for a healthy organ. The American Society of Transplantation says larger studies are needed before transplanting infected kidneys is done routinely. The Harvard Health Letter. Easy upper body boosters, arm, shoulder, and chest strength are crucial to maintaining independence and warding off injury. When your upper body strength dwindles, you risk more than the loss of power to open a car door or lift a bag of groceries. It's not just a strength problem. It may also be a length problem. Shorter muscles reduce your range of motion, and if you do any reaching activities without adequate range of motion or muscle strength, like hanging curtains or putting dishes in an upper cabinet, you can get a small tear in a muscle or rotator cuff or tendonitis in the shoulder, explains Claire Saffron Norton, clinical supervisor of rehabilitation services at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. The oomph in the upper body. The number of major muscles and muscle groups enable us to use our arms and shoulders throughout the day. The deltoid muscle moves your entire arm at the shoulder joint and helps you wave your arm overhead. The biceps muscle on the top of your upper arm helps bend your arm at the elbow joints, making it possible to raise a glass to drink. The triceps muscle on the underside of your upper arm straightens your arm at the elbow joint so you can push a window up. The pectoralis muscles in the chest allow you to move your arms up and down, up, down, in, and out, so you can push something away from you or lift something up. The trapezius muscle in your upper back moves your shoulder and shoulder blade so you can shrug. The rhomboid muscles under your trapezius move your shoulder blade back and forth. Think of starting a lawnmower. The latissimus dorsi muscle at the side of your mid to lower back pulls your arm down so you can pull a window down. Also crucial to upper body strength is the rotator cuff in each shoulder, the group of tendons and muscles that helps you raise and rotate your arm. Why do muscles change? At around age 35, we start losing muscle mass at a rate of 1-2% per year. After age 60, muscle loss accelerates to 3% per year. This deterioration is called sarcopenia. Your muscle cells shrink, and you also lose some of the speed at which the motor neurons fire messages from the brain to the muscle. So you become slower, and you lose muscle mass, bulk, and power, explains Saffron Norton. If you're less active when you're older, maybe because of energy or arthritis pain, you face a use-it-or-lose-it problem. That sedentary lifestyle and disuse of the muscles can also cause them to shrink or tighten. Get your power back. The great news is that you can improve muscle size and strength. Saffron Norton recommends working with a physical therapist to get back on track. The therapist can evaluate the strength and length of your muscles and the range of motion of your joints, and then design a program to fit your particular needs. A program typically involves gentle stretching to keep muscles supple, plus strengthening exercises like tricep curls with low amounts of weight, just a few pounds, and a high number of repetitions. That's because you don't need to bulk up. You need to condition your muscles and increase their stability and endurance. Just remember that once physical therapy is over, it will be up to you to keep your muscles strong, either by going to a gym or maintaining your own home workout 2 or 3 times per week. We've given you a few easy upper body boosters below. For more workout ideas, check out the Harvard Special Health Report called Strength and Power Training for Older Adults, and that's at www.health.harvard.edu/SPT. So, moves of the month: overhead press. Repetitions 8 to 12 for strength, 6 to 10 for power. Sets 1 to 3. The tempo 3-1-3 for strength, 1-1-3 for power. Then rest 30 to 90 seconds between sets. Here's the starting position. Stand tall with your feet about shoulder width apart, your chest lifted, and shoulders back and down. Hold a dumbbell in each hand at shoulder weight, at shoulder height, with your palms facing forward and elbows pointing out to the sides. Movement. Slowly raise the weight straight up until your arms are fully extended. Hold. Slowly lower the dumbbells back to the starting position. Tips and techniques. Keep your abs tight. Keep your spine neutral and your shoulders down and back. Don't pull your elbows back in starting position. And then the next one is the upright row. Repetitions 8 to 12 for strength and 6 to 10 for power. Sets 1 to 3. Tempo 3-1-3 for strength, 1-1-3 for power. Rest 30 to 90 seconds between sets. Starting position. Place the band under both feet. Grab each end of the band with your palms up. Then flip your hands over so your palms are facing you, and the ends of the band hang inside your hands toward each other. Stand tall with your arms extending down in front of you. Movement. Bend your elbows out to the sides and pull the band to chest height. Hold. Slowly extend your arms and return to the starting position, resisting the pull of the band. And the tips and techniques, don't arch your back and keep your abs tight. Keep your shoulders down and back, away from your ears. Keep your wrists straight in line with your arms. Ask the doctor, are gut bacteria linked to heart health? I can understand your... I heard on TV that bacteria is a person's gut, in a person's gut, might cause heart disease. How could that be possibly true? I can understand your skepticism, and I shared until recently. We've known for nearly two centuries that every human being carries various microbes or bacteria, viruses, and other microorganisms on us and inside us. However, we've long thought they were just freeloaders, taking advantage of the warmth and the nutrients in our body that our body provided them, not having any effect on our health. In the last 10 years, however, research has produced two big surprises. Each microbe has its own genes. First big surprise was that, collectively, all the microbes that live on us or in us have more than 100 times as many genes as we have human genes. All their genes taken as a group are called our microbiome. The function of any gene is to make a particular protein. The second big surprise was the discovery that many of the proteins made by our microbiome are like the proteins made by our own genes. Those microbiome-produced proteins get into our bloodstream, travel around our body, and affect our health. In other words, it has suddenly become very plausible to imagine that bacteria or other microbes living in our gut could affect other organs in the body, including the heart. For one thing, it appears the bacteria in our gut can affect risk factors for heart disease. For example, the gut microbiome probably influences whether we become obese or develop type 2 diabetes. It can also affect the levels of LDL, or bad cholesterol in our blood, and our blood pressure. People who suffer from obesity, diabetes, high levels of LDL cholesterol, or high blood pressure are at greater risk for developing heart disease. In addition, bacteria in our gut can directly affect the plaques of atherosclerosis in the arteries of our heart, the most common cause of heart disease. Most heart attacks occur when a plaque of atherosclerosis ruptures. This causes a clot to form and the artery to narrow, blocking blood flow and causing a part of the heart muscle to die. The gut microbiome can increase the tendency of a plaque to rupture, reduce the ability of the artery to widen, and increase the tendency of blood to clot. Not a healthy combination. So, the bacteria in our gut probably are a risk factor for heart disease. However, our understanding of this connection isn't yet sufficient to develop treatments that will protect us against heart disease, and such knowledge is unlikely to come soon. But because the influence of the microbiome on health may be profound, future treatments based on the microbiome may be profoundly affected. Are you missing these signs of anxiety or depression? The signs of mental illness aren't always obvious. Subtle changes in mood or behavior are often attributed to aging, just like weaker muscles and fuzzy thinking. There's a tendency to dismiss it. Well, of course I'm worried. I have heart disease. Or, of course I'm sad. I'm not as relevant as I once was, says Dr. Michael Craig Miller, an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. But depression or extreme sadness, worthlessness or hopelessness, and anxiety, debilitating worry, and agitation do not need to be routine parts of aging. Getting help for these feelings can help you maintain your health and enjoy life to the fullest. Symptoms. Sometimes recognizing depression and anxiety takes a little honest reflection about your behaviors, feelings, and habits. Here are some signposts. Apathy. Have you lost interest in the activities that used to bring you joy? Has life lost so much meaning that you feel empty? Those are classic signs of depression. Helplessness or hopelessness? Do you feel there is little you or anyone can do to improve your life? Helplessness and hopelessness also are classic signs of depression. Changes in habits. Sleeping or eating too much or too little can be a sign of depression, so can drinking more alcohol than usual or engaging in risky behavior. Persistent fatigue. It's normal to be tired at the end of the day, but if you're tired all the time, it could be due to depression or anxiety, or it may be related to an underlying medical condition, such as an underactive thyroid or heart failure. Difficulty focusing or making decisions. People who are depressed and anxious have difficulty making decisions because they worry whatever they do will be wrong, says Dr. Miller. Or you may have trouble concentrating or paying attention to others. Mood swings. If you're easily irritated or extremely impatient or overly self-critical, or if you experience frequent mood swings, it could be a sign of depression or anxiety. Unending worry. Are you anticipating every possible problem and focusing on it rather than looking at the lake or sky or enjoying being with your grandchild? Dr. Miller asks. He says that kind of worry could be due to an anxiety disorder. And then finally, wanting to be alone. If you enjoy solitude because you like the time to read or meditate, that's okay. But that's different from staying home because it takes too much energy or to interact with others. That's a sign of depression, Dr. Miller says. What should you do? Just because you're experiencing one of those symptoms doesn't mean you'll be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder or depression. But if you're too caught up in one feeling or another, having less pleasure in life or having trouble doing what you need to do, then certainly get help, says Dr. Miller. Reaching out to family and friends may be a good way to start the process. Talk to people who might be understanding, compassionate, and helpful, Dr. Miller says. If you feel embarrassed to share your feelings or worries with those close to you, make an appointment with your doctor. Treatment. Help for depression and anxiety can come in a variety of forms, such as treating underlying conditions that may be causing depression, taking antidepressant medications, or taking part in talk therapy. There are also plenty of pill-free approaches that can help. Exercise is an important one. A daily walk can help you maintain your overall mood, energy, and positivity. Increased blood flow to the brain seems to make nerves healthier. They plump up and make firmer connections. Another strategy is staying connected socially. Social connections are associated with reduced stress. The takeaway, you don't have to suffer with depression or anxiety no matter what your age. It's useful to find a way to manage it better so you can live your life fully and experience being alive. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy. Thank you.